Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Mostly Mets podcast. It is post-trade deadline podcast time. I'm Rob Brender with Toby Hyde. We made some predictions last week, Toby. I said the Mets would get a big bat. I was half right. They didn't get the bat I thought, which was Todd Frazier. They wound up with Jay Bruce. You said the Mets would probably wind up with just a reliever. You were half right. They got John Neese, who in some ways is a reliever now. You didn't think they would get a bat. So I guess, again, we were both kind of half right. We're not going to get too deep into this before we bring our guest on, before we read our promo copy, but just tell me, are you happy with what you saw from the Mets at the deadline?
No.
Okay, we'll go from there later on. But first, a quick programming note: to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review our channel. And definitely check out this week's all-new episode of Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs, as SNY's Mets reporter sits down with Newsday baseball columnist David Lennon to discuss the acquisitions of outfielder Jay Bruce and pitcher John Neese. And later in the show, Steve looks back at Mike Piazza's number retirement at Citi Field this past weekend. So, Toby, we're going to get into trade deadline this week with Fox Sports and SiriusXM broadcaster CJ Nikowski. I'm very curious to find out what he thinks of the deadline. And then at the end of the show today, I think the two of us should go back and forth on what we like and don't like about Bruce and Neese. How does that sound?
That sounds like a plan. I would point out, you know, you started with where we each predicted the Mets would go last week. I sort of took the easy one and said reliever. And I think you should give yourself a little credit there. I know you want to do this anyway, but you know, it was not obvious that the Mets would be able to fit in a big bat, and that's part of my problem with the Bruce thing, but they didn't get a big bat. So I think your prediction's a little more relevant than mine, at least.
Maybe so.
What we said last week.
Be more helpful, I would think, than the reliever that they did add. So, again, with all that said, time to welcome in CJ Nikowski of Fox Sports, FS1, and SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. CJ, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's been a busy week, but everything is going pretty well, man. I'm in a good spot, man. Traveling a ton this week, but everything's going pretty good.
Yeah, I know you did the Cardinals and Reds last night in Cincinnati. I know you're getting out of there soon. So I've got to ask you, I was looking over the baseball reference page, and obviously I want to ask you about trade deadline. No, it was a good thing because okay. I wanted to see how long you were with the Mets. I forgot how many appearances it was. So it was 2001. You made 5 appearances with New York. But it led me to this. Before we get into trade deadline, you saw the Mike Piazza stuff. You obviously played with him a little bit in 2001. You've probably been around him a little bit more in your career, I'm sure, throughout time. What was it like seeing Mike go in the Hall of Fame? Just your overall reaction to that week.
Yeah, I mean, certainly glad to see him get that opportunity. I think he came a couple of voting cycles too late, but he absolutely deserved it. He was a tremendous teammate. He was obviously a great player. I think everybody knows that. That's the easy thing to look at when you look at the numbers. But he was a fun guy to be around. You know, it was only for that 1 month. I got there in September of 01, or actually got extended by a couple of weeks because of what had happened with 9/11. But he was he's a great guy, man. Just super happy for him. He absolutely deserved it. The best offensive catcher we have ever seen. And it's fun for me, man. As I get a little older here, watching teammates, former teammates go into the Hall of Fame, it's been a little bit of a treat. And certainly Mike Piazza is one of those.
Okay, so now let's take it to current events. Trade deadline, one of the busiest in decades. There are too many players to – we're not going to go through every player that moved, but which team in the National League really stood out to you as really improving themselves, CJ?
Oh, and let's see. Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I don't know if looking at probably Chicago Cubs and their ability now to close out postseason games with a little bit more confidence is huge. I don't think that can be understated at all when you think about, they're a good team. The roster was built strong, but what was going to happen postseason time and would the bullpen be an issue? They did a tremendous job, not just Aroldis Chapman at the back end, but also bringing in Mike Montgomery. They needed a second lefty. Bringing in Joe Smith is a really nice piece as well. And then also Joe Nathan. I think Joe Nathan is really important to kind of take note of. You don't know what you're going to get, and it's kind of a flyer, and you roll the dice, and it doesn't necessarily matter as much if he does well or if he doesn't. But it's been pretty good so far, and the upside there is really good as well. So they've had a real good overhaul on their bullpen. That's probably one that you see become so significant postseason time. Because they're going to win that division anyway, I think. But now what happens in the postseason and that new bullpen is going to be huge.
Are you told shocked? Me that a team would trade for Joe Nathan at the trade or pick up Joe Nathan at the trade deadline in 2016, I might have just shaken my head.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't expected. You know, he was just kind of left for dead, and he was going to try to make a comeback and after all the issues that he's had, and he's looked pretty good. The velocity has been pretty good as well. So, like I said, there's zero risk involved in bringing him in, and anytime you can have a guy who used to close out games in big situations, and he's got himself some pretty good postseason experience, that is nothing but a bonus, but he's not the guy you're counting on. So if it can't be the guy, you're still going to be fine. So it's nothing but upside.
It seems like there was a time not too long ago where prospects were highly guarded. You couldn't touch a team's top prospect. Nonetheless, for some of the packages that we're seeing now, are you a little bit shocked that teams are willing to give up these highly touted prospects in order to get, you know, guys like sometimes middle relievers?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what that shows us is the value of the middle reliever has gone up, as we've seen, and it's starting to follow a little bit on paydays. But I think people are realizing that it's not just about the closer anymore, and so there's been a shift. And then on the flip side of that, there's been a little bit of a shift in prospects because we'll overvalue them sometimes. And, you know, the value of a prospect until he gets to the big leagues is only based on somebody's opinion. And those opinions are going to vary over time. And so while, you know, one organization may have this guy, you know, slated here, and then you get different publications that will put a guy here, and then you get the actual team that's trading for that player who might put him somewhere else. So it becomes interesting as they sit there and they try to gauge what will this player be. And what happens is you get surprised a lot of times, both in a positive and a negative. Jacob DeGrom was never on a prospect list. You know, I mean, I think that tells you everything that you need to know, and he's not the only one. And you get a lot of guys that will slip through the cracks, and then you're going to get your highly regarded guys that never get it done. And so I think teams realize that. And if you're in win-now mode or win-over-the-next-couple-of-years mode, you should be pretty comfortable giving up a prospect. It's easier for a team like the Cubs to do it because they have such young players throughout their lineup, and there really wasn't room for Vogelbach and Torres anyway. So they can move for those guys a little bit more comfortably than maybe other teams can. But I do think we're at a place right now where maybe we're kind of flipping the script just a little bit where we're not valuing those guys as high, especially when you know you can get a proven commodity.
And so the Mets fall into that category, CJ. They traded a young, unproven player with some upside in Dilson Herrera to the Reds, and another young pitcher, Max Wodell, a left-hander, for Jay Bruce. Given that the Mets already have a lot of guys who are ostensibly corner outfielders, what do you think of that move?
Yeah, I thought, you know, Jay Bruce was an interesting one to the Mets for me. You know, thinking about the center field situation, right? I think that seems to be the bigger issue. Mm-hmm. But center field is not an area where you can really trade for, right? I mean, I think the one guy that might have been available would have been maybe a guy like Charlie Blackmon. And as we got closer to the deadline, I think he got less available because of the Rockies are hanging in there, and they may not have been interested in moving him at all. But other than that, there just were no other center fielders on teams that looked like they could afford to give one up that would be worth trading for. And so the Mets go for best available bat instead, or one of the best available bats instead. And so bringing in Jay Bruce in the year that he is having at age 29, it's a good move. I think, you know, what's most important here for the Mets is that they're bringing in not just a rental, but a piece that you can pick up next year for that team option. And so at $13 million, so you get basically two playoff runs with Jay Bruce. I think that's probably a bigger part of this. They're really in a spot to just get rentals. But we'll see in a couple of years. We'll see what becomes of Dilson Herrera when this thing is all said and done. But I like to pick up for them because there was not a lot of available bats that they were able to get one of the better ones out there.
Do you think he's an underrated player, CJ? And I only say that because, you know, you look at the reaction from a lot of Met fans. I just wonder if, because he's played all these years in Cincinnati, people in New York may just not know how good he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a great year, leading the league in RBIs and, you know, 25 home runs. Again, he's been a pretty consistent player. He's had some injuries and things that have slowed him down just a little bit, you know, where he hasn't quite been able to be the same guy. And there's those couple of years where the batting average was down and the on-base was down. But you got a good player. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, you look at the career numbers and, you know, it's 250. So that's about what you're going to get. He's a little above that right now. So he's not going to knock your socks off with the batting average. But he's got good power. Now, he's done it in a smaller ballpark in Cincinnati, but that doesn't take away from the kind of player that he is. His defense for me has slipped a little bit, maybe. Hopefully that doesn't show up for Mets fans in Citi Field. I had a couple of his games this year and saw one where he was struggling a little bit defensively. But again, it just goes back to the fact that there just was not much available, and Cespedes provided such a spark last year. I think Mets fans wanted that exciting name and exciting guy. It did not happen this year, but that's more because that guy wasn't out there.
CJ, I'm glad you pointed out the defense, because that really says a lot about the sort of overall value that Bruce can provide. There's no question he's got power. You know, the defensive numbers this year are really, really poor. But, you know, half-season defensive metrics, not such a great idea. But the problem is they've been poor really since his 2014 knee surgery. Sandy Alderson told SNY, you know, live on during a game, he said, you know, we don't think he's quite as bad as the metrics say. So the question is really not, is sort of how bad is he? And I know that's tricky to quantify, but what do you see from him in the games that you've done defensively in right field?
I would just say that you look at him as an average defender, I think, at this point in his career. That's probably, you know, the best way to look at it. I mean, the knee surgery is significant. I mean, you're going to slow down a little bit. There's no getting around that, and those things become even more prevalent as you get a little bit older. So I think that's what he's dealing with. He's still in good years at 29, but there's no doubt that he's lost a little bit of a step out there, and so don't expect plus defense. I don't think that's a part at all of what you're going to see. But he does have a pretty good arm. I mean, you know, he's got, what, 9 assists this year at 11 last year. I mean, he can throw some guys out here and there. And so that's something to keep an eye on. The arm is good. It's just the range is not going to be terrific. And like I said, I think you watch him for a few games and you'll probably pick up on that. But it's still definitely adequate defense. It's just not plus defense.
What are your thoughts on the Mets in regard to making a run here for the postseason? They start the day, as we record today, a game and a half out. The wild card, we didn't really see the Marlins do a whole lot at the deadline, although they did get D. Gordon back, of course, from his suspension. The Nationals get Mark Melancon in what I thought was one of the more one-sided trades in their favor during the deadline period. What are your thoughts on the Mets right now in terms of making a run?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult, I think. They might find a way to get there, but trying to hold off or trying to catch a team like the Marlins may be a little bit more difficult. You know, the Mets have just been battered this year. And, you know, thinking about, I know you guys have sure talked about the bone spurs a ton, and obviously Matt Harvey being down and Zach Wheeler being delayed and getting back. And all the things that have happened with that club this year just doesn't feel like last year. Doesn't feel like, even if they could get there, that they could go on the same kind of deep run that they did a year ago. And I know Mets fans have not enjoyed me hearing you say this, and I wrote about it, but would not be the worst thing in the world either if they didn't make the postseason. I know that doesn't sound sound very nice if you're a Mets fan, and I don't think it's a goal by any chance, but, you know, go back to last year and how deep they ended up going, and think about how young those guys were. I mean, Syndergaard didn't have a full year. He's pitching to the end of October. Matt Harvey coming off Tommy John surgery. He makes his last start in November. Steven Matz, a late call-up. He's all of a sudden pitching late into the season. I think fans forget sometimes that on the average year, you're not pitching in October. You're certainly not pitching deep into October, and you're not even spilling over into November. So that was a heavy workload that all these guys took on, and I do believe we're seeing the effects of that this year. It was great to go to the World Series. You don't regret that at all, but maybe a year to reset would not be the worst thing in the world for a lot of these young pitchers and these players, and kind of get it going and be ready to go on a nice 3 or 4 year run. But with that being said, can they get there this year? They can. I just don't think they're in it for the long haul as far as actually being able to make that nice magical run like they did a year ago.
And not just the sheer volume of innings, but the most intense innings of their lives.
That's right, yeah.
I asked you for a National League winner. How about an American League winner real quick to hop from the Mets? But, I mean, the teams that stood out to me in the American League, the Yankees, I thought, did an outstanding job restocking their farm system with guys who aren't going to help them this year. And then the Indians and Rangers are playing for now. Is there – among that group or anybody else really stand out to you as winning the deadline from the American League?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, Brian Cashman had to be fun for him. To some extent, listen, when you make those kind of moves, it's because you're not winning, you're not going to win this year. That part of it is not fun. But at the same time, you're digging in on other teams' organizations. You're trying to bring in good young players and forecast those guys and what they can do at the big league level. They haven't ever had to do that, at least not in the last 20 or so years. And so Brian Cashman gets a new angle and a new way to treat his roster, and now he gets to see what that's going to turn into over these next couple of years. And it's not even necessarily about those guys getting to the big leagues. It's about also maybe flipping those guys for big league pieces when they're ready to start really getting competitive again, which I'm sure will be next year, but probably even more importantly, 2018, when a lot of that money clears. So I think they had a good deadline. I like the Rangers as well. It wasn't as good as last year. You know, last year they had a huge one with Cole Hamels, Diekman, and Sam Dyson, but you cannot undervalue what you get in return, bringing in a Carlos Beltran, bringing in Jonathan Lucroy, although I do think Lucroy will have a little bit of an adjustment period of what he brings to that team defensively and learning a whole new staff, pitching staff. That takes time. That's not an easy thing to do. Yeah. Yu Darvish said he let up 3 home runs, and all 3 home runs he shook off Jonathan Lucroy, which I thought was pretty interesting considering Lucroy has never caught Yu Darvish before. So you got a lot of
interesting
things going on there. But the Indians are a fun team. I mean, the Indians are an easy team to root for. Terry Francona is such a terrific guy. It's an easy city to root for. So getting Andrew Miller is going to be significant for that team, and it should be interesting without a doubt. I mean, their pitchers have struggled a little bit as of late. All of a sudden, Salazar and Carrasco not having great games, and there was an injury concern on Salazar, but it looks like he will be fine. But it would be fun to see the Cleveland Indians make a run at this thing, too.
You can catch CJ Nikowski everywhere, really. I mean, it seems that way, doesn't it? Sirius XM MLB Network Radio, Sirius 209 XM 89. He hosts there. Catch him on FS1, broadcasting games and doing in-studio work, and also on regular Fox Sports. CJ, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Great to talk with you.
All right, Toby, you just heard it from CJ. I think he likes the Bruce move. We didn't really get too much into John Neese with him for a lot of reasons. But, you know, the idea that... Right, but the idea that Bruce is valuable to the Mets this year and next, of course, he's under contract at a very affordable rate next year with the team option, I think that was the biggest part of this for the Mets, wasn't it? That they get some control out of him. They know they'll have a bopper in the middle of the lineup should Cespedes leave, some protection in that way. And again, he helps for a year and a half.
No, I don't think that was the biggest part. I think the biggest part was that they have a good team now that's at the deadline was 2.5 games out, and as we record on Wednesday afternoon, it's 1.5 out, and they needed offense, and they said, we'll work out the defense later, we'll work out next year later. I really think this was a play for the next couple months.
Okay.
The next year stuff is not irrelevant, but the Mets felt like they want, you know, coming off the World Series, they want to get back there.
Of course,
that's the driving force.
Of course, no, agree.
You know, but I do think, but one of the ways in which fans objected to the move was to say, oh well, now the Mets are definitely going to let Cespedes walk, and this gives them an out when he does.
No, I think
and
that's ridiculous.
That's not fair to the transaction itself, and to the current roster, and to the front office, because you just can't predict the future at that level.
Correct.
And it's just this weird sort of cynicism and sky is falling mentality.
Well, that's the man. That's fan, right? Most
sure,
of them.
Sure. So I thought one of the things that was really interesting, Dan Zimborski, who writes at ESPN, put up a chart, would have been Tuesday, of teams that had improved their playoff odds most in this flurry of transactions. And the Mets were the second highest in baseball, up some 6%, which might not sound like a lot, but is this time of year. I thought that was really interesting. It was a surprise to me that the Mets had changed their playoff percentage that materially.
Okay. Let's get into this really quick. Do you like the trade? Let's just talk about the Bruce trade itself. Do you like what they gave up in regard and, you know, obviously what they got back?
So it's funny because over the course of Tuesday and Monday, when was the deadline? These days are all running together on me. Monday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. The trade was totally reworked, and Sandy Alderson said this. They basically had a deal in place, and then there was some a medical concern, and they had to redo it. So, you know, the first reports was that it was Nimmo who was headlining the deal going to Cincinnati.
Plus two.
And some plus two, right. And then that didn't happen, so then it became Herrera plus one. So, right. You know, credit to Sandy Alderson and the Cincinnati and his front office staff and the whole Cincinnati front office. They basically reworked the whole Mets side of the deal.
If you're Cincinnati in that case, don't you re-engage with other teams? I mean, I'm a little surprised that they didn't then reach out to everybody else and say, hey, look, this deal is falling through. We don't like this minor leaguers' medicals. What can you offer? Because, you know, at that point, you're basically pigeonholing yourself into whatever the Mets have.
Well, you don't know that that they didn't make those calls, and you don't know that they didn't make those calls.
Well, no, they might have. They might have. But it seems a little bit – it seems like they just said, hey, look, in good faith, we want to do the deal with you. We had it arranged. We like this prospect too in Dilson Herrera. Let's just make this work. That's what it sounds like happened.
Yeah, I don't – you don't know they didn't make those calls. And I don't – and, you know, other teams might have said, hey, we're not interested in Bruce at that rough price. And so they didn't – they felt like – maybe the Reds felt like the Mets could get them there in comparable value. And then, Sandy might have said – or whoever was on the phone, you know, said, hey, this thing fell through. We'll get you comparable value. So who knows, right?
In terms of what they gave up, I think they did very well in this. Look at the price people are paying for controllable assets.
So here's my problem with Bruce is he's not that special. And everyone who thinks that Bruce is great talks about RBIs. And RBIs come naturally when you're hitting behind Joey Votto, who's on base 40% of the time.
And home runs. They talk about home runs, too. Let's be fair.
Yeah. And the home runs, he plays at Great American Ballpark. Everybody hits better at home. But you put those numbers on the road, and it's just not special. He's not an average guy. He's not an on-base guy.
The home road splits, to be fair, again, the home road splits this year are not in favor of his home stats.
The way to do that is career, not
– Well, right.
You do career unless you have some reason to chop it up into shorter time periods.
Right, but as we said on the phone to each other
– There's too much variance in annual home road splits. But you want to go a full career.
But as you and I have said to each other on the phone after the trade, and we were just talking privately, that he has the light tower power. So it's not like you're getting a guy who's going to go on the road or play at Citi Field now and he's going to be, you know, intimidated by the outfield wall being a little further away. I mean, he's got the power to hit the ball out. I watched him hit 2 home runs in San Francisco about a week and a half ago, and you know how hard it is to hit the ball out there. And he crushed the ball in San Francisco. So he has the ability to do it no matter where he is, right?
Sure. He can hit the ball over the wall. The question – so – does this make the Mets a better team, and how much?
I think it does.
So
I do.
So you've got Conforto and Granderson and Cespedes running around. Lagares is on the DL. And you're going to put Granderson in center field and beg Cespedes to play there? This is a bad defensive outfield, Rob.
Right, but the thing is, as you heard, and CJ just said it, he said it perfectly, there really wasn't a center fielder available. And he brought up the name Charlie Blackman. Well, as it turned out, Charlie Blackman didn't get traded. The Rockies didn't wind up trading anybody at the deadline. They might have if they would have known 2 days later that Trevor Story was going to wind up being done for the year. Maybe then they changed their mind, but they didn't.
They're
at
not
the
a
time.
Serious playoff contender. The Rockies just don't like making moves, right? I mean, the Reyes Tulo thing a year ago was like a huge aberration.
Right, right. But the point being that they just
sat out
wasn't
like 9
a center
of the last 10 deadlines, and someone's going to send me.
Understood.
I'm wrong.
Understood. But the point being that there just wasn't a center fielder available, and certainly not a right-handed hitting center fielder that would have really fit the profile of what the Mets needed. So that said, you had to find a bat. I was a little surprised, as I said, in terms of the predictions before our deadline came up and our deadline show for last week, that I thought they'd go after Todd Frazier because I thought, hey, he gives you the home run pop and he plays third and you desperately need a third baseman. But they didn't wind up doing that because maybe Frazier wasn't available at all. He didn't get moved either from the White Sox. So there wasn't really a third baseman moved this entire deadline either. So they made the play for the catcher in Lucroy. It doesn't wind up working out because Milwaukee doesn't love the prospects, and they probably got back a better package from Texas anyway. So that said, they figured here's our way to add a bat. It's corner outfield. It's the only bat that we have that's really available to us that we can afford, that the prospects match the whole nine yards.
You make a good point about Lucroy, right? That was a pretty heavy package in prospects that the Rangers paid. The Mets could have matched that. They chose not to because you probably can't get there without Ahmed Rosario in there.
Right, right. And that's the thing. They didn't want to part with Rosario. They don't have as deep a system as Texas does. So
Very thin in arms, yeah.
Right, very thin in arms. So I'm perfectly okay with them not parting with Rosario for a year and a half of Lucroy. That was the one guy that I said, don't trade him for Lucroy. Anybody else for me would have been on the table, and that includes Dom Smith. I know a lot of people don't feel that way. I would have traded Lucroy. So, I'm okay with what they did there, and I'm okay from the Milwaukee perspective saying we can get something better. So they did what they had to do. But I think as far as what the Mets did ultimately was, like you said, they want to win this year. They identified a bat that's going to help the lineup. When Cespedes does come back, now all of a sudden you have a pretty nice 3-4 combo in your lineup in Cespedes and Bruce. Is it fantastic? No. But is it much better than it was? Oh, yeah. And it lengthens this lineup so much, Toby. It just takes out one or two bats that shouldn't be in there. So, for me, I'm okay with it because, like you said, center field, you're going to have Granderson, you're going to have Conforto out there. They would have been out there anyway, regardless, because Lagares is done for what may amount to the rest of the season. So, if you couldn't get a center fielder, I'm okay with adding the bat wherever you can. And he was the guy. I mean, who else are you going to get?
The point is this outfield is going to be cover your eyes awful, and Bruce gives away a lot of his offensive gains with that defense. And you've got Diaza on the roster, and don't look now, but Diaza had that huge July. I mean, you're playing for 2.5 months, it's just really hard to predict player performance, right? Who would have guessed when the Mets traded for Cespedes last year that he would have the best 2 months of his life?
Right, right.
Did you?
No, absolutely not. Nope. And the funny part, you saw the press conference with Sandy yesterday when he was asked about whether Bruce would be some equivalent to what Cespedes was last year, and he laughed.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. Look, if Bruce brings, you know, even half of what Cespedes did last year, you'll probably be happy about it. And this Mets team, I do think, got better at the deadline. So
I want to make one final point too, that you see a lot of these, you see a lot of folks saying, well, Bruce hits with runners in scoring position.
That is
not predictive, right? Last year, for example, Curtis Granderson outhit him badly with runners in scoring position. There's no reason to think.
Exceptionally well this year, too, by the way.
It just doesn't matter. There's just no reason to think that that is a good predictor of what's going to happen in the next 2.5 months.
I don't think that's why they made the move. You know, look, it's
no, I don't think the Mets did, but I think fans reaching for that need to take a serious reality check here.
Right. Understood. All right. Well, thank you again to CJ Nikowski for joining us. Again, you can catch him on Fox Sports and FS1 and on MLB Network Radio, Sirius 209 and XM 89. A quick programming note, listen to all of SMY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting. Just subscribe to the SMY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. That's the SMY.TV audio network. And please make sure to rate and review our channel and definitely check out this week's all-new episode of Inside the Park with Steve Gelbs as SMY's Mets reporter sits down with Newsday baseball columnist David Lennon to discuss the acquisitions of Jay Bruce and John Neese. And later in the show, Steve will look back at Mike Piazza's number retirement at Citi Field this past weekend, which was just amazing. I thought the Mets did a tremendous job there. Toby, thanks. That was fun. I guess next week maybe we'll get into that Piazza retirement just a little bit, give our overall thoughts. We didn't really get into that, and maybe see how this Bruce thing plays out for another week. And John Neese. Sorry, John, we didn't talk about you much this week. So
hey, you know, John Neese for Vistardo is a nice little pickup. Neese can work out of the bullpen. He can give the Mets starting pitching depth, which they just don't have right now. That's not a bad addition.
There's a guy who likes that little deal. I like it. And also, by the way, they got rid of Vistardo's money for next year. Jeff Olden, thanks very much in the studio, and everybody else that's back there at SMY. That's Toby. I'm Rob. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SMY.TV audio network.